Welcome to the Domestic Fuel Cast, a podcast devoted to news and information about alternative fuels and energy, produced and hosted by Zimcom New Media.
Big oil versus the renewables. Can't we all just get along? I'm John Davis reporting. It's no secret that the major oil producers have been at odds with the people who produce renewable energy, in particular, biodiesel and ethanol producers. At the recent Advanced Biofuels Leadership Conference in Washington, D.C., Advanced Ethanol Council Executive Director Brooke Coleman remarked how the success of renewables has led to oil companies being behind most of the opposition to the Renewable Fuel Standard, better known as RFS2.
We are disrupting an existing marketplace. We are not social media. We are not creating a new search engine. We're not doing something new. We just happen to be doing what other people are doing better. And the problem with that, of course, as you mentioned, is a lot of people don't want us to succeed. And a lot of those people have a lot of money and they're spending it. They're spending tens of millions of dollars a year trying to destroy the biofuel brand from corn ethanol to biodiesel to cellulosic biofuels. There's nobody that is exempt from the attacks right now. They're static on this policy because this policy is working and it's disrupting. And we're getting to the point where the incumbents are being forced to change. There's no way around that. You're seeing it with E15. You're seeing it with E85. You're seeing it at Propel stations with algae pumps. The oil industry is on notice, and they see it changing, and they're going to try to kill this thing now. They're not going to succeed, but this is where they want to stop it.
Fred Cannon, the CEO of Keyor, a cellulosic fuel maker, is a little more coy in his condemnation of oil companies and what he believes they are trying to do when highlighting the few setbacks ethanol and biodiesel have had and ignoring some of the green fuel's successes.
I think it's, well, you have a lot of agendas here. I don't know if we want to go into a lot of detail about all the agendas, but I think everything is amplified. That's what I was trying. The point I was trying to make in my talk, everything gets amplified. A failure gets, or something negative gets amplified, once you get once the general perception turns to one of doubt and skepticism.
And Cannon says the biofuels industry just needs to prove its worth by successfully continuing to put gallons of ethanol and biodiesel into the gas tanks of vehicles, something that Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack is quick to point out could be increased without the opposition.
As far as E15 is concerned, the Department of Energy and EPA went through extensive testing. They determined that 2001 models and later models, that E15 was fine. And I would think that those tests will withstand the test of time.
Not so fast, says Shell Oil's downstream policy and advocacy manager, North America, John Reese. It's not the oil companies who are fighting E15 going into vehicles. It's the car makers themselves.
Most vehicles and the retail infrastructure are only compatible with 10% ethanol blends. EPA did approve the use of E15 for 2001 and newer vehicles, but the issue with that is that the automobile manufacturers don't support that and do not say that the E15 would be compatible with those 2001 and newer cars. It's our view that E15 is only compatible with those cars designed to use it. In other words, flexible fuel vehicles, and then the vehicles starting in 2013 by a couple of the companies are going to start making vehicles compatible with E15. So those would be compatible going forward. But the issue is not going forward. It's looking back from 2001 until now. And so our view is that E15 would only be compatible with approximately 5% of vehicles on the road. That's basically the flexible fuel vehicles.
And Reese points out that the infrastructure to carry these higher blends also doesn't exist right now. Once again, that's something he says is on the individual retailers and not the oil companies themselves. Jennifer Holmgren with LanzaTech, a company that turns carbon monoxide into ethanol, says all this finger-pointing toward each other is not helping anyone.
I believe that it is so important for us to get as much energy and fuel into the pool that we need to have all of the solutions that can provide sustainable fuels at the table. So in my mind, it can be natural gas, it can be petroleum, it can be biomass, it can be algae oils, it can be all sorts of things. We just need to get as many to the table that can provide sustainable solutions. By sustainability, I mean economic, social, and environmental. So we're not just talking about something that looks green, but something that makes economic sense.
But she admits getting oil and renewables on the same page might be easier said than done. Although she's encouraged that more oil companies are getting involved in biofuels, giving them a skin in the game.
I really think that both sides need to appreciate that oil is not going away, but that oil isn't enough. And if you can get both sides to agree to that, that oil doesn't give us all the answers, but that it is a necessary piece of the equation, I think we'll be fine.
And Reese says Shell does want to work with biofuels makers because, frankly, his company has a stake in this too.
Shell has put out our hand, said that we wanted to work with other stakeholders to find solutions to this problem. Ultimately, the mandated levels of the renewable fuels need to be reduced such that they're consistent with the capabilities of infrastructure and the vehicles, but it also needs to provide the right incentives and the regulatory certainty for investments in the cellulosic biofuels. This whole debate around the blend wall and the EPA use of waivers on a year-by-year basis is just going to create tremendous uncertainty, and you know, we feel like that uncertainty particularly has an adverse impact on the cellulosic biofuels, which Shell is interested in. We need that regulatory certainty. We don't see it coming through the use of EPA waivers.
So we'll see going forward if it continues to be a finger-pointing game or a game where everyone is all in. I'm John Davis reporting.
You've been listening to the Domestic Fuel Cast, the official podcast of DomesticFuel.com. Check out the website daily for the latest good news about the alternative energy industry.